thing we'd done was wrong. Staying in the wilderness too long. Keep your eyes on the prize, hold on. The only thing we'd done was right. Was the day we started to fight. Keep your eyes on the prize, hold on. Hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize, hold on. Hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize, hold on.
You are listening to Farm and Fiddle, the podcast that celebrates and explores rural life for today and tomorrow. Every week since June 1999, we have brought you the best voices in sustainable agriculture on Mid-Missouri's KOPN 89.5 FM. This is Rhett Hartman.
I'm Margot McMillan. Thanks for listening. This recording of a speech by Amy Klobuchar was made at the annual meeting of the Iowa Farmers Union in Grinnell, Iowa, on December 6th, 2019.
We are going to go ahead into the presidential candidate forum part of our afternoon. So we are going to have questions that are going to be submitted by audience members. If there are, there's a jar up here that if you have your note card and you have a question you would like to ask, please submit it. We are going to look through them and make sure that we have a good diversity of questions for all of our candidates. This afternoon, we are going to be joined on the stage by our moderator, National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson. He is a third-generation farmer from Turtle Lake, North Dakota, and previously served as the North Dakota Ag Commissioner. He grew up in the Farmers Union, participating in Farmers Union youth programs, serving as county president and chairman of the board of a local Farmers Union co-op. He was elected president in 2009, and we are so grateful that he will be here to be our guest speaker tomorrow as well. So we're very grateful for Roger for being here this afternoon.
Thank you, Aaron. So, okay, this isn't about me, and it's not about Aaron, it's about the presidential candidate. So, thanks, Laurie, for doing a great job of talking about trade. And you'll have a chance to hear me talk about whatever I want to talk about tomorrow. So we're going to get right with it. The idea here is every candidate's going to get about a half hour. They're going to speak for just a few minutes initially, and then it's going to be Q&A. And I have the distinct pleasure of introducing the first candidate, your next door neighbor, a good friend of Farmers Union. Senator Amy Klobuchar she's been in the Senate for some time, and I think every single year has received the Farmers Union Golden Triangle Award, the highest honor we give to a member of Congress. So, without any further ado, Amy Klobuchar, come on up then.
I want to get lipstick on Roger's collar there. Anyway, it is so great to be here with all of you. And I know you're going to hear from a few candidates, but let me tell you my story. You all know I'm from Minnesota, and I can see Iowa from my porch. You all know, I think I was your keynote speaker last year in the middle of a blizzard. Brought a little better weather with me this time. And our states have a lot in common when it comes to agriculture. Now, I know what you guys have. Like, you are first for what? Corn, eggs, hogs, right? And we are first for sweet corn, sugar beets, and yes, turkeys. So we'll just let that go. When I got to the U.S. Senate, my number one ask was to get on the Agriculture Committee. And I'm the only one up on that debate stage that made that ask, and also that has been consistently devoted to these issues. And you can see it not only in the work that I've done and the bills that I've passed, but also where my heart is. And I'm so proud to have out there in the audience my former ag staffer for 5 years, who is also your national president and the Minnesota Ag Commissioner, Dave Fredrickson, who's been down here for me as well, and it's going to be a great surrogate. And if that impeachment hearing's going on, you're going to hear a lot more from Dave Fredrickson. Okay, I have, since we've gotten to the Senate, I've been through several farm bills. And for me, it has always been about putting our farmers first and putting our rural communities first. And you all know the Farm Bill is about more than just farmers. It is also about economic development in rural areas. It's also about nutrition, and it is also about conservation. And I've always appreciated how Roger and Aaron and the Farmers Union understand that. And I specifically appreciate your focus on small farms. And when I first got to the Senate, I was actually ahead of my time, and Senator Grassley and I worked on some provisions to try to get the aid focused on the smaller farmers and to stop the payments going to the Beverly Hills 90210 area code. I remember the New York Times and Washington Post both did editorials. This brand new senator from Minnesota had ultimately, in my first attempt, been defeated because of, I think it was 22 farmers in Arkansas, and we didn't make it through, but eventually, with your help and your support, we made it better and better. As we've looked at what's happened and what's happened to our country and rural America in just these last few years under Donald Trump, he made a bunch of promises to farmers. And the way I see this is he is literally treating our farmers like poker chips in one of his bankrupt casinos. He doesn't get the fundamental ideas of trade policy, which is you keep your promises and you keep your threats. He does neither. He doesn't get that long term that our farmers understand that you've got to have consistency. There's an old Ojibwe saying that you make decisions not just for this generation, but for 7 generations from now, and he can't keep his decision 7 minutes from now. What I think that we need to do is get back to some sanity in our trade and foreign policy. I think that we have to keep our farm bill strong. He has got to go back to the negotiating table, and when I am president, I will tell you this. I will stop these seedy underground oil waivers that he has been giving that have been disrupting a lot of our farmers here in Iowa, closing down biodiesel plants, putting our ethanol industry at risk. And he can't just say one thing when he comes out and goes to an ethanol plant and then say another. I've been strong on dairy, and I understand I actually was the one that got the retroactive payments in on dairy. Which has been a help to our small dairy farmers who are facing a lot of problems. And then I also been a leader on climate change. And I think the role that farmers can play when it comes to climate change has been underrated. We got one pilot program in there for cover crops and some other things out of the EQIP program, but there is so much more that we can do with you. And I'm just excited because I believe that kids that grow up in rural Iowa should be able to live in rural Iowa. And that means a strong farm bill, and it means making sure that people in the urban parts of our country understand, I'm from the metro, so I'm good at doing this, that food doesn't magically show up on their tables, and it is being willing to take on not just interests that are against us, but also take on consolidation. And I will leave you with this. Iowa is where the Granger movement started. And you should be so proud of that. You had actually the first comprehensive ag antitrust bill in the country. And there were farmers standing out there with their pitchforks who didn't like the high rail rates, sound familiar? Farmers standing out there with their pitchforks who stood up and said, no, we're not gonna let this Gilded Age just roll right over us. And you stood up, your ancestors did, and it mattered, and it's time to do it again. I lead the antitrust subcommittee on the Democratic side. I'm the leader on the bills that will take on this consolidation, not just with tech, but in the ag industry and across the way. Because if we want to promote small business and small farmers and entrepreneurship and capitalism in this country, then we have to make sure that everyone has a fair chance. And you do that with a president who's willing to stand up to big interests and cares about rural America and understands how to get it done. I'd love to have your support. Thank you. And then I'm going to have a golden triangle if I get to the White House there and put it in the Lincoln bedroom.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. You've been so generous with your time with us, and not only coming to last year's convention, the snowstorm, but being with us for our Heartland Forum in April, and we really appreciate the dedication you've given to farm issues and the farm issues.
Thank you.
You addressed this somewhat in your opening remarks, but according to the USDA, farm income has dropped 50% from our recent highs, and the median farmer in Iowa lost money. Farmers are tightening their belts, and you're hearing the same thing from your farmers in Minnesota, I'm sure. They're meeting with their landlords, their lenders, their input suppliers, and they're trying to just make ends meet, but they're losing equity in their farms, putting off investments, and it's harder to get the next generation back onto the farm. So, again, emphasize to us what you would do to address this farm income crisis.
Well, the first thing is to look at some of the underlying causes. Some of it we know is the weather and what's happening, people unable to even harvest or plant their crops. But the second thing is that we have a president who's not had consistency in policy. And that means a lot to farmers because you've got to figure out what's happening with policies to make decisions. So the first thing that I would do is make sure I had a strong USDA commissioner and someone that was going to pay attention to our farmers in the Midwest and across the country. The second thing I will do is to support a reauthorization of the Farm Bill and look at any emergency funding that we need. I would go back to the negotiating table with China, and I would make sure that, of course, we have fairness in our trade policy, but I would use much more of a focused approach to where the problem is. I did this, in fact, and worked with the Obama administration when we were having our iron ore mines closed in northern Minnesota. The key was trade enforcement. And we were able to open those mines again. This is before Trump came into office, without using, as I would say, a meat cleaver when it comes to trade policy, or maybe we should call it a tweet cleaver. And I think that is going to be key. The second part of it is just making sure that we implement the Farm Bill in the right way. You know about the USDA payments. I'm sure you've talked about them, how they've been given out. Well, the farmers I talked to, and I've had some very tearful conversations with people when the media isn't there. People say, you know what? I've inherited this farm from my dad, who got it from his grandpa, who got it before that, and I don't want this farm to end with me. And I know I'm getting these payments right now, but that's not what I want to do in the long haul. I want to be able to sell my soybeans to market. I want to be able to pass this farm on to my kids. Making sure that we make it easier for young people to farm. And that is, I've worked a lot on the farmers and ranchers, young farmers and ranchers programs to create more incentives and make it easier for grazing and make it easier to purchase crop insurance. Keeping the ARC program strong, which I think if better implemented could also be helpful, but that was something new we did in the last Farm Bill. And then making sure that we are covering as much as possible when it comes to our farmers. It just bothers me because I don't want the rest of the country to think that what you guys want is a handout, because I know how hard you work. And I know how unfair this is, what this administration has done. And so this is a much bigger deal than just a farm bill. It is an entire approach to our rural economy. And I will stand up for our rural economy, and that's what I've done as senator and what I'll do as president.
Thank you. We've got several questions here dealing with climate change and soil. Of course, Iowa has been sort of ground zero in a lot of this in the media, dealing with water quality as well. I think the thrust of them is there a way that we can design a program that pays farmers for doing the right thing for the environment, and if so, what might that look like?
Sure, and I learned a lot on this from my first chairman of the Ag Committee when I first got to the Senate, and that would be Iowa Senator Harkin. And he was devoted to these conservation programs in the Farm Bill, CRP, CSP, and EQIP. And over the years, there has been, given the cost of land and the price on land, less we've been able to do with it, and I think we should be doing more. I worked on the Prairie Pothole State provision with Senator Thune, which created more incentives to allow native prairie grass, and I think we have to do more with that. When it comes to climate change, a few things. We did put a pilot program in the last Farm Bill for $25 million out of EQIP to reward farmers for doing things like cover crop in the winter and other plantings that would capture CO2. As I said, farmers can be part of the solution. Just like you guys gave us Norman Borlaug, who until I got to the Senate I thought was from Minnesota, because he studied there. We can do the same kind of thing when it comes to climate change. The first grants went out on this new pilot, about $13 million. Iowa got a grant for winter cover crop, and I think there's even more we could be doing there. So we need to pay attention to this pilot, make sure that the Trump administration doesn't mess it up. Hopefully, Bill Northey will be helpful there, and we've got to make sure it doesn't get messed up. And then from there, we can take it in a big way and make the case that this should be a big part of solving climate change and rewarding farmers for practices that is going to bring down our CO2 and help to be part of the solution when it comes to climate change. There's other things we can do on day one. I'd get us back into the International Climate Change Agreement. Nicaragua and Syria were the only two countries that weren't in that agreement when Trump got us out. They are now in it. So we are the only ones in the world that aren't in it. Bringing back the clean power rules, the gas mileage standards, things that you can do without Congress. I love Congress, but there are 137 things, I have it all on my website, that you can do in the first 100 days without Congress that are legal. And many of them involve things that will be good for rural Iowa and rural America.
Wonderful, thank you. Our next question has to do with the food system, both in Iowa and in the country. In Iowa, only about 10 to 15% of the food eaten by Iowans comes from Iowa. Local and regional food movements have gained some momentum in Iowa and around the country, but we know that fresh, healthy food from local farmers has proven healthy benefits. So how do we encourage tangible and real connections between farmers and consumers that lead to farmer opportunities and healthy communities?
Great question. So I would start with, we've made sure that in that Farm Bill, and we need to do even more, that we put a big emphasis on nutrition, and that includes our school lunches, and that includes food stamps and other things that would be helpful. I'm opposed to what the president has been doing lately to mess with those nutrition programs, but that is the part of this. Secondly, we started covering fruits and vegetables and other things in the Farm Bill, and that was a change over the last decade that I think is a good thing. The third thing is looking at like food deserts and places where people don't have access. It can be extreme urban, it can be extreme rural, but where people don't have access to fresh fruits and vegetables, and making that a major part of our food policy. The last thing would be things like farmers markets. I was at the Des Moines farmers market, and that was an incredible sight. I had no idea how big it was. I'm sure you have ones in other communities in Iowa as well. But I got to see how people who live in urban areas, and it reminded me a little bit of our state fair, yours and ours. I never weigh in on which one is better, but except to note that we are the one that have the Princess Kay, the Milky Way butter carving contest, where 12 butter busts are carved in a revolving refrigerator. But that reminded me of that, because you have a lot of people, including in Des Moines, who are in a more urban area, and they don't always get to see where their food comes from. And I think those kinds of markets, as well as the state fairs, which are really important, are ways of exposing people to rural way of life and an understanding of the importance of healthy food. And the last thing I'd add is we've had this increase in obesity, and the more we can do to get out there, the importance for our military, the importance for our country of access to good food will be really important for our country's security and our country's future.
Thank you. We also have a number of questions that really tie into that. You talked about the rural way of life. There's several questions about the rural quality of life, and particularly around some of the environmental issues surrounding CAFOs and some of the very large corporate livestock operations, and what that has done to sort of the air quality and the water quality. Thoughts about how that may be dealt with, both here and around the country?
Well, I think part of this you can look at in the Farm Bill nationally. It's been tougher to do that just because of some of the resistance on the Republican side. But I think also state by state, I see Dave out here, and he's worked really hard for Minnesota under Governor Dayton for better air and water quality. And it would be worth it for people interested when I'm done here, but on a break or something, to talk to him about what we've done in Minnesota. I don't always say that because I don't want to, like, Minnesota versus Iowa thing, except we won't talk about what happened in the college football game 2 weeks ago. But that's worth it. And I think a lot of this has got to be fought because you organize people and say, look, we want better safety, water quality and air quality in our states, and people galvanize across that. And I think there's this mistaken view that people only care about that in urban areas, and that's not true at all. And so it's making it an issue and organizing like you do in the Farmers Union.
Well, very good. Our next question has to do with taxes. And the question, yes. And the underlying question is, how are equitable taxes going to protect rural farms and economies? How will it ensure this? When fair taxes are important, but they won't necessarily stop vulture capitalists from raiding companies and cutting jobs, which decimates a local economy.
Yes, so I led in my opening remarks with consolidation for a reason. I mean, there's many ways you can go at this with mergers and things like that, but the use of the antitrust laws is one of them. And I know the Farmers Union has been a lead on this, and I think that's something that can't be overlooked. In terms of taxes, one of our best issues and most important issues that we have on Donald Trump, because he promised people a bunch of stuff in the middle of the country. He promised farmers, he promised workers, and it's one of the reasons that he won in states because of those promises he made on infrastructure, on healthcare and pharmaceuticals, and then on farming that he made. It's one of the reasons that he won in states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, Ohio, and Iowa. So my plan is to tell the truth about what's going on, especially when it comes to taxes. When we do that, I promise you this, we will build a blue wall around those middle states, including Iowa, and we will make Donald Trump pay for it. What he has done with the tax bill, the best example is that tax bill that passed. And afterward, he went down to Mar-a-Lago and he said to his friends, I just made you just got a lot richer, to his wealthy friends. And I can tell you, none of them were Farmers Union members. None of them were even farmers. He said that to some really wealthy people in the financial industry and other places that were benefiting from this tax bill. So what I would do is repeal the regressive parts of this tax bill. Let me give you examples. The corporate tax rate went down from the mid-30s all the way down to 21%. Every point we go up is $100 billion in 10 years. You think of what that would pay for with infrastructure. You think about what that would do to help rural hospitals when we're seeing closures. Then the international tax rate, if we simply go back to where it was under the Obama administration, $150 billion in 10 years. And that's just the icing on the cake. There are so many examples of what we can do and the case that we can make to rural America about how we can make for a more fair and better tax code for our farmers and for people who are not as friends down in Mar-a-Lago. So my plan, when we pass the tax bill, it will not be good to go to Mar-a-Lago. I've never been there in my life. My plan will be to come to rooms like this and say, this is what we did when it came to childcare for rural areas. This is what we did when it comes to making sure that people have affordable housing. He thinks that the Midwest is flyover country to him. Imagine me on the debate stage with him. I'm going to be able to say, it's not flyover country to me. I live here.
Thank you. Several more questions going back to climate change. This one says, the IPCC predicts Iowa will be having 40 or more days of above 100 degree heat in the summer by 2050. How are you going to prepare for massive crop failure and food shortages that seem headed our way?
The first thing I need is all of you at our side, because I think the farmer's argument, I'm going to get away from what we can do in the farm bill and conservation, but your support for moving on this is going to be critical. For too long, and I've been involved in our votes on this, our bills on this, a lot of the voices come from the coast, understandably, right? Melting Greenland ice sheet, rising ocean levels, but we've got to start telling our story in the Midwest. We have to start telling the story of the wet cropland and how you can't harvest things and what's been happening. Everything was predicted by our military. We have to start telling the story of those fires in Colorado and in Arizona. The story of Fran, the woman out by Pacific Junction who gave me her binoculars, and you look through them and she says, this is my house. I bought it with my husband and we lived there with our 2 4-year-olds and I love the kitchen. She said, I love the way the light comes in the kitchen. And I say, as I'm looking through the binoculars, it's sleeting because I'm always in bad weather. And I say, where is the kitchen? She says, it's all underwater. It's a nearly 100-year house. There's horsehair in the plaster. It has stood here sturdy for all those years. And then I said, Fran, is this the river? There's this raging water. And she says, no. That's the road. And I said, then where's the river? She says the river is 2.5 miles away. It's never gotten even close to this neighborhood or this house before. So Fran chose those binoculars to 7 presidential candidates, but she endorsed me because she understands this. And that is the voice from the Midwest to be able to make the case of what it means to our farmers, to be able to make the case for the rising home insurance. We've seen a doubling of home insurance across this country. It's a different kind of argument. It's an economic argument. It's a quality of life argument. And we need to bring people with us in the middle of the country to be able to not just do those 3 things I mentioned that you can do without Congress, the Clean Power Rules, the gas mileage standards, the trade agreement, but it's also about passing sweeping legislation and then making sure, because we've got a lot of rural co-ops, so do I, and I understand the issues, making sure that when we put a price on carbon, and there's many ways we can do it, that we make sure that money comes back and helps people so they're whole. My grandpa was an iron ore miner, as I mentioned, up in northern Minnesota. I remember driving up to Duluth when I was growing up with my dad and seeing a billboard when things were really tough up there, and it said, last one to leave, turn the lights off. So we have to understand as we change to this renewable energy and we make sure we have our wind tax credits and that it also applies to small wind, so important to our farmers, and we do all the work we're going to do to get to that carbon neutral by 2050, and we're pretty much all on board on that Democratic debate stage. As we do all of that work, we've got to make sure that we do it in a way that brings people with us and that we have a plan. Especially in our rural areas, that it works for them. So I'll be doing this not just from my head, but from my heart. And it's the way we get the votes to get it done. Because we just can't win by a little bit in November of 2020. We have to win big. And the way we win big is with you at my side to bring the people of Iowa with us in those 31 counties. You know what they did? They voted for Barack Obama, and then they voted for Donald Trump. And you are in unique positions to be the ambassadors to bring them with us to get a new president into that White House.
Well, you've done a wonderful job addressing a lot of our questions today, and we've got a whole pile more, but we have limited time today, so please, thank you so much for your time being here, and take some minutes to conclude with us, and again, thank
Very
you.
Good. Well, I could ask questions forever, so, and answer them. So, I just want to thank you so much. Maybe I'll end with a little holiday story here. Well, a few years back, my husband and our daughter, we went to that movie Polar Express. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's with Tom Hanks as the conductor. And we walked out, she was like, I don't know, 10 years old or so. And we get out of the theater and she looks at me and she says, Mom, there's one thing in that movie that wasn't true. And I said, oh, what? Was it when the glaciers froze over, when the train is going over and they immediately freeze over so the train could go over the lake? And she's like, no, not that. And I said, was it the million elves up at the North Pole? She said, no. And I said, well, what wasn't true? And she said, it was at the end when the conductor, who's Tom Hanks, is standing on the train and it's getting ready to go and the little kid's out there and he says, come on, kid, get on the train. He says, it doesn't matter which way the train is going, just get on the train. And my daughter looks up at us and says, Mom, it does matter which way the train is going. So that is my closing message to you. It matters which way the train is going. We have a president that has let down your farmers union, he's let down your members, and he's let down rural America. And yes, this is an economic check on this president. You think of what just happened with voters, many of them in rural areas, in places like Kentucky, right, where Mitch McConnell now has a Democratic governor, in places like Louisiana, in Virginia. What happened was, in those first two examples, the president went down and did a rally standing next to the opponents of those Democratic candidates the night before the election, and guess what? The Democrats won. So my first question is, where else can we send him? But the second thing is that we won in those states, and we won the governorship of Kansas, and yes, in Wisconsin, and in so many races, and you gave us Abby and Cindy, and we were so close to electing JD, and this time we can. When you look at what you did, turning the House of Representatives into the People's House, we did that with some common sense candidates who had an optimistic economic agenda for Iowa and for rural America. We did that. But it is something else as well that's going on in this country. It's a values check. It's a patriotism check on Donald Trump. I think about the words of Joseph Welch, who was the Army Counsel during the McCarthy hearings. And he was from Primgar, Iowa. And like a history nerd, I went to that town to try to figure out where his house was. I never did. But he was the one who said those words that really changed the course of history and civil liberties in America. He was the one that looked at Joseph McCarthy, the congressman, this Army Counsel from Iowa, son of immigrants, and said, have you no sense of decency, sir? Have you no sense of decency? And I was getting to that. That was my punch line. God, you just steal my best line. He was a Grinnell College graduate. You know where I am. Okay, but that is what he did. And when you think about this election, I want you to remember that as you talk to your friends and neighbors. And the argument for me, your neighbor to the north, is that I have won my races that way. I have run every place, every race, every time. I have won in that district. That every time that borders Iowa. I have won in the district, the rural, pure rural district that borders North Dakota and South Dakota every time. I have won Michelle Bachmann's district every time. And I have done it not by selling out on our values, you can ask Dave about that, but I have done it by going not just where it is comfortable, but where it's uncomfortable. I have done it by looking people in the eye and telling them the truth and telling what I think we need to get things done. That's how I've passed over 100 bills in the U.S. Senate. That's how I think we should govern, because I don't want to just eat by that victory. I want to win big. And mostly, I don't want to be the president for half of America. I want to be the president for all of America. So I want to thank you for having me. I would love your support, and you're not going to find anyone else. I wish we had a big farm debate. That would be really fun. Who could reel off all of the aspects of the EQIP, CRP, and CSP programs. But I'm ready to have that debate. See you later. Thank you, everyone.